once I've begun. At night I'm kept awake by me, thinking of lyrics constantly. I'm listening to my favorite tune, rehearsing verse around the room. It hypes me up, won't let me sleep, and then I know that I'm a deep. For nothing keeps me from my bed, except for these thoughts inside my head. This music plagues me all the time, and simple words become a rhyme. It freaks me how this music can so influence my life and plan. Directions that I wanna take must include the hardcore break. Stop once I've begun.
Okay, my name is Annalise. You are listening to Beagle Radio, and I'm talking with drum and bass legend MC Tali, or Tali, who's coming to Whangarei with a very special show for the 20th anniversary of her first album, Lyric on My Lip. No mai haere mai ki Beagle, Tali.
Kia ora, tēnā koutou. Nice to be here.
Awesome. Now, Tali, you're one of our drum and bass pioneers, releasing Lyric on My Lip and working with many of the biggest UK producers, MCs and DJs through the 2000s, and winning Best Female MC 3 years in a row over in the UK. So your international success is often said to have helped pave the way for other artists from Aotearoa. I was wondering, in those early years, did you ever feel kind of put into the role of an ambassador for the Kiwi scene?
Not really. I mean, I think at the time I wasn't really even thinking about that so much, about being an ambassador for the Kiwi scene. I was very much just like doing it for myself, particularly because when I sort of started out in the 90s, the electronic scene wasn't really, it didn't really exist in the way that it does now, let's just put it that way. It didn't have the sort of commerciality and the mainstream success that it has now, the popularity. So in order for me to be successful, to at least find my way in a music that I loved and was really passionate about, I had to leave New Zealand. You know, I was encouraged to stay here and be a pop artist or a singer-songwriter, and that was not what was driving me. That was not my passion. So I sort of had to leave New Zealand. And so when I left, I actually felt a little bit of a, you know, like a, if you know, middle finger, if you New Zealand, you know, if you don't care about electronic music and drum and bass, I'm gonna go and find a place that does, kind of thing. And it wasn't until I sort of started getting this success in the UK and things started happening for me and I started playing around the world and the word got back to New Zealand and people started to get sort of excited about what I was doing and being like, actually, shit, she's making some waves over there, that it felt like people really sort of gave a damn then about drum and bass and what we were doing internationally. And it's really interesting because at that time there was only a very, very small handful of us that were doing it. So Salmonella Dub, traveling overseas, myself, The Upbeats, Concord Dawn, and then a couple of years later, Shapeshifter. And it wasn't really until we sort of started bringing that success back home that people sort of started to pay attention. But, you know, if that is what helped put New Zealand on the map or helped maybe pave the way for others, then of course I'm going to, like, own that. Like, that's awesome. Yeah.
So high.
I read that you said, I quote, hip-hop music was the first music that really struck a chord with me and moved me. I was 11 or 12 when I really clicked with it. So you kind of moved a bit more into hip-hop rather than drum and bass for a while there, in the mid-2000s, I believe. So it was that like a real natural move to, because you sort of went from hip-hop, started emceeing Over the Top of Jungle, right? And then you sort of went a bit more with a few more hip-hop MCs and hip-hop.
Yeah, so that was actually the product of a really quite dark time in my life. I had just broken up with Full Cycle, like, as in, like, the label was disbanding. The guys were all going off and doing their own thing. And I remember at the time, Ronnie Size, who was my sort of boss slash colleague, saying to me, like, you can go and work with whoever you want. I'd also just broken up with my boyfriend. Bristol felt very small and very insular where I was living. And so I started working. My manager just hooked me up with this hip-hop producer to just sort of give me something else to do, because I was feeling quite down and a little bit like, oh, what do I do now with my life? And he hooked me up with this producer who I actually ended up falling in love with and ended up moving to London to be with. And we started making, yeah, hip-hop. And it actually, in some ways, it was really amazing, because I was very depressed during that time, and I had anxiety as well, and I really didn't want to go to drum and bass gigs anymore. I didn't want to play in that scene. I was a little bit over it. And so being able to work with this guy and work with other producers on music that wasn't just drum and bass was actually super refreshing, because it kept me being creative. It stopped me going too deep into a down, sad hole, you know, like it kept me buoyed a little bit. But unfortunately, what happened from that was that producer that I was with for 2 years and was deeply in love with and living with, he ended up breaking up with me because, you know, various reasons, but a big part of it was that I wasn't the girl that he fell in love with. So in a way, the fact that I wasn't doing drum and bass kind of dimmed my sparkle a little bit. I lost a sense of who I was. And even though I was doing this hip-hop stuff and I made this kind of mixtape called Do It For Yourself, and there are definitely tracks on there that I'm proud of, and I loved the experience of working with him and meeting the different people I met, ultimately it was an incredibly devastating breakup, because I was then completely cast adrift and was effectively all alone. And I really had to rebuild myself. And it took actually getting back into drum and bass and finding my love for the music again and for the scene itself again and the culture that reignited the spark that set me off again. So even though I've always loved hip-hop music, I love music of Black origin, you know, and that includes soul and disco and jazz and blues, that period of my life, even though it was like, yeah, you know, I was making this great music and working with these cool rappers, it was also quite a deeply devastating time in my life. So yeah, but one I was able to come out of in a real positive way.
And because it was after that, that you actually won one of your best MC awards?
Yes. Yeah, so I just got back into emceeing again, and I was back out on the circuit and touring again. And then they had these I'm actually looking at one of my drum and bass awards now. Which year was it? 2008. Yeah, the UK Drum and Bass Awards 2008, and I was nominated for Best Female MC, and I actually won it. And that was another really big boost to my confidence. And then the other thing that happened was, because I'd sort of said, oh, I'm going to give up, I'm going to retire, I'm not going to do this anymore, you know. The other thing that happened was my friend Shimon, who is a really amazing drum and bass producer and has his own record label, he messaged me and he was like, there's no way you're giving up. You did one drum and bass album. Are you crazy? There's plenty more albums than you, and I want to make one with you. So he actually got me back into the studio. And then the other thing I did was I started a jazz band. So I sort of was doing this cool sort of hip-hop jazz band, which was another way to be creative. And it made me realise that it's really important to not just put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
But to actually do lots of things that bring you joy. And sometimes you won't have enough focus for some of the things that require them, but other things will really blossom. Yeah, so that period after I started coming out of that depression and I met my husband, and it felt like a rebirth for me, which was such an incredible time.
Absolutely. And is that something that you've always done, is to have multiple massive projects on the go at the same time? Who's going, right, I'm going to do this and this and this and do them really well? Because I've got to say, listeners, this group, this jazz group that you're in, they played at Ronnie Scott's. You played at the Jazz Cafe. You played at some of the really, really big jazz. It wasn't
just I don't even know how we got those gigs, but we just sent in demos and they really loved them. And actually, some of the promoters, like one of the promoters at Ronnie Scott's, he was a fan of drum and bass. He knew who I was. And he was like, "You're playing in a jazz band?" I was like, "I know, hear me out. It seems weird, but let me show you." And we played at Ronnie Scott's twice, and both times we sold it out. There was a queue around the street the first night that we played. And then we played the Jazz Cafe. And, you know, like, I'm playing on the same stage that people like The Roots have played, and Talib Kweli, and, like, you know, like, New Zealand's Nathan Haynes has played there. Just, like, some really incredible, incredible names. And I'm up there with my wee jazz band. So, yeah, I've always had multiple projects on the go. I'm still like that now. You know, like right now I'm working on an EP. I'm also about to compose music for an incredible podcast that my friend has applied for funding for, which is about art, about paintings, and she's got me to do the composition. You know, I'm working on my live shows that I'm doing around the Motu. Yeah, I'm always working on several things. It's the bane of my life, but it's also the one thing that gets me up in the morning and keeps me going. It's my ADHD. I mean, what can I say?
Position, those who thought I had them for, yeah, they better get to know. I got that intuition leading me into commissions where I make all the conditions, cause you know I'm on a roll. And I am choosing my selection based upon a real connection, like a mirror's true reflection of the soul. Always winning, never losing, so you better get to moving out my way, because today I'm on a roll.
It seems like the perfectly harnessed ADHD, because you did do some other composing, yeah, because you did a composition for a theatre production in the UK.
Oh my God, yes. Do you know what? That was the first time that I ever really, like, had this foray into composition. So when I had my jazz band in London, this playwright got in touch with me and he said, "I'm looking for someone to write the music for a 20-minute play that I'm doing at this theatre in Battersea. And I found your music on MySpace or something. I don't know what it was. He found my music, or maybe it was just Apple Music. He came across it. And he said, and I saw you're based in London, and I love it. I love the fact that you're rapping and it's jazzy music and you're telling a story. Mm-hmm. He said, I wondered if you'd be interested in doing it. And I was like, sure. Absolutely. He was like, you know, can you compose? I was like, absolutely. I was like, no, like, I don't know how to compose. Like, I had just started producing. And my ex-boyfriend, the hip hop guy, he had taught me how to produce. He had taught me how to record my vocals. So what I did was I took some of these old tracks that I'd first started playing around with, and I submitted those to this playwright, and he loved them. And then he gave me the lyrics, the words to his, because he wanted it to be a musical. It was a political musical. It was actually about, oh God, it was when the Democrats and the Conservatives actually had to join Parliament in the UK. And I mean, it's the most mundane topic, but it was also quite exciting. It was all over the news. Oh my God, the Conservatives can't form a government without the Democrats. It would be like Labour working with national or national working with the Greens, even. Like, it was seen as so outlandish. So anyway, this playwright writes this musical about it. He wants me to submit the music, so he gives me the lyrics. So I'm sitting at my keyboard. I'm like, well, I mean, I can write music. I've written all my own songs. So here I am writing stuff about the Lib Dems and the Conservatives over these jazz beats that I've written. And I send them in, and he was like, these are great. So he got his actors to learn my songs, and they did it. It was this 20-minute piece, and it was amongst a whole lot of other plays. So there was a whole lot of different things that happened that night. But what happened was the High Tide Theatre Festival that happens in Suffolk picked up his musical and said, we want to turn it into a 50-minute play. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shoot, now I've got to compose music for a 50-minute play. So I kind of had to come clean, and I said, look, I just gave you some old productions that, you know, like that I'd written ages ago. I didn't really write new music for this. I don't actually know how to produce that well. He said, doesn't matter, we've got funding. We'll put you in the studio with a producer. So they gave me my own, producer. So all I had to do was write top line melodies, basically take his lyrics and make them into top lines. And I would tell the producer what I wanted the music to sound like. I'd be like, I want it to sound like a Portishead track, or this one needs to sound like a Wu-Tang hip-hop track. And my producer, Christoph Bauschinger from Germany, is incredible to work with. He would just be like, bish, bosh, bash. Yeah, and we ended up writing this music for, I mean, there were times when on a Friday we'd be sitting there in the heat of the studio drinking beers being like, what the hell are we making? Like, we're making music for a political musical. Well, I mean, it had a showing on the West End, so I can say that my music was performed on the West End. It might have only been for one night, but it was.
Would it have been to just say, no, sorry, I can't do it, you know, no, that was, you failed me out, and then just retreat? But the fact that you took on that challenge, this sounds like that kind of MO, you know, take on the next challenge.
That is very much my MO. That is my IP. That is who I am as a person. I say yes to things sometimes without really thinking about the consequences, but it's led me into these incredible opportunities and situations that have stretched me as a musician and a person. And for that, I'm really grateful.
Because one other thing that I think is absolutely bonkers but amazing is that when you wrote, the year that you completed Love and Migration, your album, that won you your first TUI for Best Electronic Art, I believe, that same year you wrote a bloody book.
I don't know how I did that. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was teaching 3 days a week at a school as well, at Sylvia Park School. So I was coming home from school every day and dedicating an hour to writing my book. So, you know, my husband would come home and he'd be like, hi, and I'm like, hi, and I wouldn't really speak to him, and I'm in the zone. He would make me a cup of tea and bring me a biscuit over, and I would be sitting there tapping away, tap, 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 for an hour, sometimes 2 hours if I was really on a roll. And I made a point of doing that every day. And then in the weekends, I was recording my album. So I held down a 3-day job, wrote an album and put a book out. And yeah, it was 2019 was probably one of the most incredible years of my life, I would say, definitely.
And then bam, it all got shut down. Lockdown.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, I'll just make a documentary now and write another album.
Because there was a documentary that came out with after Love and Migration. So where can people find that doco? And did you make that all by yourself as well? Was it just self-funded, self-filmed?
No. So I am very grateful to have received funding from Creative New Zealand. So I just applied and said I want to make a documentary celebrating 15 years of Lyric on My Lip. It's a really cool project to do during lockdown. All of the interviews will be conducted on people's phones or computers. They'll send me the footage. I can just send it to my editor friend in Wellington. I'll do all the music, obviously. It's all my music. I've got all the footage. So I had a lot of old footage from back in the day. One of the things I bought with my first publishing money was I bought a handycam, and I just used to film everything and document everything. So I've got lots of old footage, backstage, gigs, on tour. Lots of it I've lost as well. Lots of videos that have been corrupted. I mean, if you've got old VCR videos, VHS videos sitting under your bed like I did, definitely get them transcribed into digital, because I lost a lot of footage, a lot of stuff. I was so upset. There was things I will never get back, and memories I will never be able to relive. Did all that, and then I did some interviews. You know, obviously we were allowed to be in bubbles with people, and there was a point where we came out of the bubble and we could see our friends. So I conducted some interviews with some of my, well, they interviewed me. I just got my friends to interview me. I was like, just ask me this question and do it like this. So I got my bloody neighbour to interview me at one point, because I had some pickups I needed to make, some footage that I needed to add. So she interviewed me for it. I just gave her the questions on a piece of paper and told her to ask them in an interviewee fashion. She was like, oh, it's my first acting job, you know, and then got that all edited up and put that out. If you just go on YouTube and type in Tali Lyric on My Lip documentary, it'll take you to the link.
So this performance on November the 1st at 116, I mean, you're touring around, but for Whangarei, it's going to be right here at 116, where Beagle Radio is. It's not just a live recreation of Lyric on My Lip, it's incorporating many different genres and stories of your life. It's going to be the storytelling, eh? And aspects of your career and your creative process. Yeah.
So actually, Lyric on My Lip, if I'm only playing like one song off Lyric on My Lip, it's actually, I'm showcasing my entire 8 albums worth of back catalogue. So, you know, people know me.
Yeah, and
people know me as a drum and bass artist, and so people assume that all I can do is drum and bass. And a lot of people don't know that I can sing the way I can sing. A lot of people don't know that I can write the way I can write, because some people in the music industry or out there, they disregard electronic music. They don't think it's real music. They don't think that it's quality, and yet electronic music has taken me around the world to some of the most incredible places. It's introduced me to some of the most beautiful people who I still have long, enduring relationships with. It has taught me so much about culture, different cultures, and it's really stretched me as a writer. And, you know, electronic music is moving music. It can take you to different stratospheres, you know, and I want people to understand that that music can be translated into different forms. So even though my music is electronic music, I'm classically trained, you know, like I had a jazz band, like I grew up listening to music of Black origin. So a lot of my songs actually translate beautifully into soul songs, jazz songs. We've even got a track that's a bossa beat. Yeah, so, and the musicians I'm working with are so talented. Like, honestly, they blow my mind. We had a band rehearsal this morning, and my mouth is still left hanging open in some of the solos that they've got. So you're in for a treat up in Whangarei. I really hope that people will come along to 116 and see the show on the 1st of November, because it is going to be, yeah, storytelling, stuff about my back catalogue, my career, my life, but also just sharing in that intimacy of live music is so special. I can't wait.
So with that long list of achievements and credits and accomplishments that you've had in your career for this show, with your storytelling, how did you go about selecting which ones to highlight?
So hard. It was so hard. So, I mean, we were like, well, we've got to do a song off every single album. So every album has at least one song played off it. Some albums just lend themselves more perfectly to this live and intimate setting because, you know, like in my back catalogue, there's only three full drum and bass albums. All the rest are like sort of like electronic soul is what I call it. Gangster jazz is the other word I name it. And it's, yeah, so it was a combination of songs that have really beautiful storytelling, but also showcase my rapping, you know, because I want people to still see that, you know, I'm an MC. Oopsie, I'm just going to plug this in. So songs that showcase my rapping, I want people to see that I have lyrical content, but also my band members chose songs that they love to play. So, you know, Harry, who's my guitarist, he's my MD. I call him my MD. And Cam, my drummer, he's the assistant director. And so they're like, well, I like to play this one. And, oh, your voice is really great in this one. So we all got to choose our favourites, and then it was a sort of a pick and mix of each album.
Oh, look at it. Now, I'm just going to, finish off with this quote I really liked, because you are telling stories, and you've said, and I read this on the good old Audio Culture, people enjoy hearing me tell my story because I tell it how it is. It's not all great. Shit will happen to you. It's how you deal with that shit. It's about how you learn to pick yourself up and progress forwards. It's about learning how to find the strength you need within yourself, which, you know, really is kind of part of your mentoring. So without sort of like spoiling the show, is there a particular thing you've done, a particular challenge that you've overcome, or a particular any kind of ability you've given to somebody else, anything that really stands out to you as a peak life moment?
Oh gosh.
And I was like, how on earth you go zoom and get it down to it? But there's that one that you just go, that was my absolute moment of
I mean, not really. I'm sorry to disappoint. There isn't any sort of peak moment. The thing is, my life is full of peaks and troughs. So trying to pinpoint one peak is quite difficult, you know. Like, I look, my life is like the Southern Alps, babes. it's like that, you know. There's no Mount Aoraki just soaring above. I mean, obviously, like, for me personally, just selfishly, when I won my New Zealand Music Award, that was like a real moment of just feeling like validation. You know, because like at that point I'd been in the industry for 18 years, and I know I spent 10 years of that overseas, but I spent 10 years of that overseas doing the groundwork for other drum and bass artists to then be able to travel overseas. So that validation was super, super important to me, and something that I had dreamed of since I was a child. But I know it's just an award, you know, but other things are like, you know, meeting Ellipsa, who is an incredible drum and bass artist. I met her, she came to me for mentoring, and then we quickly realised that she actually needed me to manage her. I don't really manage anyone. I mentor a few people, some people, and I do music consultations with people, but managing someone is quite a, you know, full-on job. So I managed Ellipsa for 3 years, and at the end of that 3 years, it was like, she is a bird with wings so big that I need to let her free. She needs to go and work with a UK manager and a UK agent. And so seeing her soar and seeing her go on and do the things that she's done, I mean, she was nominated for Best Electronic Artist at the Music Awards this year, and I got to go along with her. And just for her to be nominated was like huge for both of us, because it was like, again, that acknowledgement and validation of her as an artist, and for me, the work that I had done to help get her to that point. So, I look at On Ellipse with pride, but there's so many people out there who I have, you know, been a part of their lives. Colette Warren, she's a really amazing drum and bass artist now too. I taught her how to record herself, and she was in my band as a backing singer, and I told her she should be her own front woman and start doing her own music. And she was like, I don't know how to record. So I showed her how to use the equipment, and next thing you know, she's making her own records. So I can't really pinpoint one thing in that respect, but what I really hope is that When I've left this mortal coil, I hope that people look back and say, you know, yes, she was a badass MC and she made some great music, but for me, it's more about the legacy I leave in terms of how I've helped people or changed people's lives or made people feel like they were worth something. That for me is more important than anything.
Well, listeners, you can come and be part of that legacy on November the 5th, right here at 116. And where else are you playing around the Motu?
So we are also playing down the 16th and 17th. We are playing in Nelson at Room 25, and then on the Sunday night at Musselin in Onikaka. And then we are heading down to Christchurch on the 6th and 7th of December. We're doing Space Academy down there, but we're also doing a private house party as well, which will be cool. For some muso heads, and we're also doing the Lucky Star Variety Show, Music in Parks, and we'll be in Fitianga in January, so that'll be kickstarting the 2025 shows. So we'll be trying to do some other shows around. We want to get down to New Plymouth, Whanganui, you know, Timaru, Wanaka, Dunedin, yeah.
busy, and it'd be nice for Christchurch, because although I believe you had your first gig in Dunedin, but Christchurch is where you really started. Is that right?
Yeah, Christchurch is super close to my heart. I mean, whenever I land back down there, I'm like, this is my second home. My ancestors arrived from Scotland in Littleton. So, you know, whenever I go to Littleton, I'm like, my ancestors had a house around here somewhere, a little cottage around here somewhere, you know, like I feel like I'm at home when I'm down there. That's where I became an MC. It's where I discovered drum and bass. It will always be huge, huge for me. It's to the point where I wrote a song about it called Birth of a Break, which you can hear at the show.
Hey! why? Look, thank you so much for talking to us, Tali, and all the very best, and we're looking forward to seeing you on the 1st. And ka kite, keep doing what you're doing. Sorry, I should say, keep doing the million things that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Tickets are also available through eventfinder.co.nz. Just search for Tali, flip the script, 20-year anniversary show.
Oh, that's wicked. Okay, thanks so much, Tali.
Thank you. See you later.